You're listening to 地球好辣 Super Hot. This is Green Development and Taiwan. I'm your host James.
This is Yu Ping. Hello everyone.
Hi.
Over these 3 months of staying in Taiwan, we give you a lot of different things to think about. Mm. So it's quite diverted from where we started. But overall, I think it's still an interesting result.
Yeah, definitely. I think the core component, but before there were two parts to the project that were proposed. That was the EIA comparison and then a case study creation of a way of aquavoltaics in Taiwan.
Yeah.
And it just seemed that over time this EIA comparison became bigger
and more interesting
in bringing in concepts that I wouldn't have thought about before. You know, when I first proposed this to my course coordinator, he said, "Do you have a legal background?" Like, no, but we're not looking at the legal
aspects.
Part of it. We're looking at the process of it and how people are involved in it. But it was this people part that I wasn't really sure of at the start.
Mm.
It's like, okay, I'm sure there's people involved, but with this process, you know, what kind of authority is involved, how long does it take, what kind of documents are used, you know, those aren't really legal, that's the process.
Mm.
But then, because you helped invite me to lots of different places, workshops, we had, the first one was the Taiwan Sustainability Hub,
yeah.
Net Zero with Social Science.
That one was quite interesting.
It was quite interesting. Yeah. And seeing how a lot of social science concepts are being introduced, you know, beyond technical questions, beyond legal questions,
it's yeah.
social.
Yeah.
And so that got me curious, especially meeting some of the people who had been involved with changing some things in Taiwan. But it was actually the Jeffries.
Did I mention to you I went to a walk tour with him on Saturday before he left Taiwan?
No, he didn't.
Yeah,
because
he's really interesting.
Yeah.
And I offered him saying that if you have any free time, you're welcome to our office or whatever, wherever you want to go. And he said, I wanted to visit Dihuajie. So we ended up strolling around the street. Yeah. He's a very interesting guy.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
So that that workshop, even though we talked about it afterwards, we were thinking, like, what was the point and the purpose of it? Did it really seem like we got anywhere from there? Did we learn anything from it? But as that was about just transition and climate justice. And I think the just transition was the more of the interesting one.
Yeah. I mean, because there are mainly Germans there, right? They invited several guest speakers from Germany.
Net Zero with Social Science.
Yeah.
That was the German one. The Jeffries, she was the speaker from the UK.
You were more interested in that one.
I was more interested in that one in terms of how that influenced my project.
Yes.
Because it led us to having that big discussion about what just transition looks like in Taiwan.
Yeah.
And then bringing concepts of like public participation, how to actually engage and empower people to adopt renewable energy in their backyard.
Do you remember
what
she said to us that most impress you?
It wasn't something that I was impressed by. It was the conversation
that get you to think.
It was probably the lack of conversation amongst the professionals that were invited, because she wanted to learn about Taiwan's just transition challenges.
Yeah.
So she wasn't necessarily there to give ideas and thoughts. She was hoping to facilitate a discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And the quality of discussion and the things that were brought up were pretty much amounted to, we don't know. There is no just transition in Taiwan. We're not having this conversation. That's kind of what I got from it. And so, me always looking at the challenge and like, what's the most exciting challenge? I thought, okay, how do you actually get just transition working in Taiwan? How do you get people talking about this other than just saying, I don't know, or complaining about the government?
The thing is, it's not embedded in our society to talk about what is justice.
Mm.
What does that mean to you? I mean, in Taiwan, when it comes and goes, it stays there, it's stuck there. A death penalty.
Yeah.
Like, this is an unsolved issue. A lot of people, growing population, wanted to erase that.
Yeah.
Because that's the international wave. But then there's a huge and conservative kind of perspective. Whenever this kind of issue comes up, servicing, and they would just battle, like really ugly battles. And there's no concept of justice. It's about, you know, revenge even. Or they give justice a really interesting but fixed
idea. It's not just justice, yeah. It's revenge justice. So I think that was what Professor Jeffries was trying to get at.
Yeah, yeah.
Without necessarily going there, is that the Western idea of just transition cannot just be copied and pasted into different places.
Yes.
And that we kind of had that conversation as well. Just transition in Africa looks different to what it is in Australia.
Mm.
You know, just transition in Africa, it's around financing for development, financing for renewable energy. In Australia, it's how to have people who are in mining jobs transition to a green economy.
Mm.
And so it looks different in every country.
Yeah.
But also the concept of justice, like you mentioned. Each culture has a different interpretation of that. And a Confucian interpretation is different to a Western one.
Yeah.
And so that's obviously something that I couldn't solve or even participate in, but it did lead us to having this conversation around just transition in Taiwan and public participation and ultimately like what would my project be more useful to do. Is it more important to look at how to involve people in it, or is it more important to just expand the scope of EIA?
Yeah. Environmental impact assessment. It's also, it's almost like a taboo. Like today, I briefly mentioned this to one of the owner of the energy company. And he was like, no, don't talk about that word. That word's dangerous. Something like that. And yeah, it was like, people don't even want to understand it anymore.
Mm.
They just want to get away from it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They just want less red tape, and that's understandable. Like renewable energy developments and solar developments already have very thin profit margins.
Yeah.
Compared to traditional businesses. But having a strong social component of EIA, which is a founding principle of EIA, doesn't mean that it would expand the process. There's lots of efficiencies to be made in other administration, like combining different laws into one, combining different legal jurisdictions together.
Mm.
So having, you know, the Ministry of Economy looks after this, and Agriculture looks after this, and Interior looks after this. And it's just each department has their own procedure.
Yes.
There's no combined application. Then there's the waiting time. There's things like the EIA committee. There's only one centralized one in Taiwan versus one for different county levels, which a lot of other countries have.
Yeah.
And so expanding EIA is not necessarily the problem. There's a lot of just back-end stuff that needs to be worked out.
And you mentioned something that's very unique I mean, in Taiwan, we don't go into that. Many people, some people try to voice that, but I think, I mean, engagement, social engagement is not, definitely not in our process, in EIA process, a big thing. It's not even there. They are talking about scientific evidence, which does not exist, as far as I can see, but they claim whatever is written there. Like, if you do a four-season survey, then, oh, it's a scientific evidence, and it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But that's how the professionals in this field in Taiwan, they view this whole thing, and they deem it the most important thing.
Yeah.
And that's not even the core.
And then you could also just do a thin social engagement where you just survey the demographics. You just look at, okay, there are 40% of the people live here are farmers, the average age is 63. These are just statistics, but you're not actually engaging.
They're just junk
data. It is. And whatever you decisions you make off of statistics you get from the Department of the Interior is just going to be assumptions based on what that community needs or experiences.
Yeah.
The only way you can know is by actually engaging.
Yes.
And the thing is, from my observation across different experiences, is that Taiwanese will tend to just stick to the letter of the law and not do many things voluntarily.
Mm-hmm.
So if there is no requirement to do social engagement,
then we are free. Okay.
Then,
case closed.
You know, as a business, why would I want to hire someone extra to go into the community to spend time to write reports, then I have to read reports, I have to action what those people say. I just want to get in and get out.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting thing, as well as you think at what these developers were building solar projects, what are they ultimately interested in? Do they actually believe in why we need renewable energy because of climate change and because of resource use? Or is it for other reasons? Is it for making money in supply chain because there's supply chain pressure for Taiwan to convert? Is there a need for energy security? Like, what's the purpose behind this? Because if developers are just building but not caring about the environment, if it gets destroyed or if there's any social impact, then it's just accelerating the potential destruction from climate change. Why wait 100 years for a forest to be destroyed or a farmland to be degraded or for a community to be dislodged? I can do it now.
Just start a war.
Just start a war. So
I think they kind of convince themselves. They are, like, 2 days ago, we were in the fair, and you were there.
I was there.
No, you were there. And you heard them saying it by themselves. They compare the whole thing as a war, and they are the soldier.
War against climate change?
Yes, and they are like the forefront. Oh, you didn't, you missed that.
I missed that.
It was like, oh, epic. Yeah, and I think he mentioned 2 times.
Okay.
Yeah, again, like repeating, emphasizing
that we're in a war against climate change, we need to convert to renewable energy.
And those companies, the energy companies, they are at the forefront. They are fighting.
They're on the front line.
People, if you are not supplying us, you should just get away and move away. And yeah, something like that.
But they don't talk about what happens once climate change gets worse in 50 to 100 years' time.
Mm-hmm.
What would be the impact?
It's not their job, maybe.
It's not their job, but it's the narrative. It's part of the picture that we need to imagined.
So it's a self...
In a warmer world, there'll be greater typhoons, soil erosion.
Yeah.
Don't think there's chance of many forest fires in Taiwan because of the humidity.
Mm.
But lots of that around the world. But if we are degrading the environment ourselves by building renewable energy, then we're just hastening, we're making quicker the potential destruction of climate change with actual destruction today.
But
so
how
needs,
do
so
we...
So it needs to be thought about, so we need to have
yeah.
mechanisms in place like EIA where it consults scientific evidence around potential pollution and potential habitat loss and biodiversity impacts,
yeah.
as well as social impacts as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we need to have mechanisms like this. This is something that I didn't... Something I thought about before. Obviously, we need to balance
yes.
social demands and environmental demands.
Mm.
And there'll be points where the two intersect.
Mm.
But perhaps my biggest takeaway from the project was how passionately I feel about this now, is that it EIA, though maybe not the most perfect mechanism around the world, it's the most well-established.
Mm-hmm.
And most countries around the world have adopted this. Over 190 countries or so. I'm sure it's even more now. This was 190 back in 2012. And so by it already being enshrined in law, it can be made better. It's not like we're fighting for it to be implemented in the first place. It's already there in most regulations around the world.
Mm-hmm.
Most countries have the extra pressure of if they want financing from the World Bank or the IMF,
yeah.
they also need to have the process in place.
Yeah.
So having it, the groundwork is already done, it's just how do we improve it?
Mm-hmm. But I think I only have several countries to compare with, but in Japan, when they are deciding whether a particular solar case should enter or not entering EIA process, it's judging by the scale.
Yes.
And if Taiwan at any time would consider this, we will definitely follow the Japanese case.
Yeah.
But then, for example, in the UK, it's not like that. You don't have to. You might not need the whole package of EIA process,
mm-hmm.
but it's like a package. So you can draw out whatever solar development relate to. So you don't need to do the whole thing. But then, in order to carry out solar development, you more or less need to have several most important things that to take care of.
Mm-hmm.
Social engagement, but of course, and ecological impact, landscape impact, and things like that. So it's embedded there. It's still an EIA process, but it's a smaller one.
Yeah.
And a simplified one. But it's different in this side, I mean, in Asia, it's like give or take. I think by doing this, maybe the government think it's easier just draw a line there.
Mm-hmm.
But then for the developers, they will be trying to get away, of course, if there is a chance they can get away. So if you draw a line there, people would just. They would just find a way to.
This is something that I found as well, is the idea of thresholds for what is required for EIA
yeah.
and what isn't. And some places like Japan, they have a class 1 and class 2, so an upper threshold and a middle threshold.
Mm.
And usually for the upper threshold, they will require a longer process, a full process,
yeah.
whereas the lower bound will be. Maybe you just start with a scoping and involve people in the scoping.
Yeah.
And then perhaps you don't have to go develop a full report.
Right. Oh, so it's similar to the UK?
Yeah.
Is it scoping and screening?
In the screening, they will screen whether their potential development is going to be
this or that.
This size or that
yeah.
size.
Yeah.
And if it's going to be a particular size, if it's in the upper threshold, then they'll
do a scoping, yeah.
full scoping. So
yeah.
this is quite similar. And then in places like Spain, so even though the EIA law is influenced by the EU directive, same as the UK,
yeah.
even though the UK is not part of the EU anymore, but the law was drafted around the same time.
Yeah.
Spain has increased their threshold for EIA requirement to 150 megawatts.
Wow.
Up from about 40 or 50.
Mm-hmm.
So it used to be that if you were building something over 50 megawatts, you had to go through EIA. And now Spain, as of the start of the year, suspended this for 2 years.
Yeah, because they want to speed it up.
They do, and they want to get bigger sites through.
Yeah.
And a lot of the complaints is that EIA can take up to 2 years to go through. 2 years, some places 3 years.
Mm.
And that's not necessarily because you have to get public participation involved, it's just because there's a lot of other administrative burdens.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know how each country is going to address this. How do you increase the engagement of people with also making it a slower?
Yeah.
And Japan has proposed such a concept. They were talking about it at least a couple of years ago, but I don't know where that went. Maybe it got lost during COVID. But they were hoping to turn the average EIA process from 36 months down to 18 months.
36 months down to 18.
They wanted to halve it. Yeah.
Mm.
I'm not too sure where that went.
But I think if you want to really have engagement, local community engaging this issue, it more or less takes time.
Mm.
And when you are building a relatively bigger site, then you need to involve more people, and there will be more things happening in that particular site. So it really makes sense to spend, you know, at least a year to look through the whole thing. Yeah.
That's true. You know, part of that can be done before an EIA application is sent off by the developer. They can already start this voluntarily.
Yeah. Yes. If they do it voluntarily and they really have engagement, that meaningful engagement, then going through that administrative process should be really a bit easier. It's really not many of the developers would want to do that, right?
Yeah. Last time, I spoke with Martin about empowerment and engagement in EIA, and he said that even if engagement is increased in EIA law, you still have the problem of empowerment. How do you make people interested in engaging?
Yes.
And I think that's, having reflected a bit more on that over the past couple of weeks, is how do you it's going to be a long process.
Yeah.
It's a long-term process. You can fix the law today, but it could take a generation before people are actually interested in engaging with it.
And it's a hopeful thought.
And it's a hopeful thought. But it does happen. Maybe in Australia and the UK, we're all NIMBYs. Not in my backyard.
Mm.
So as soon as a development comes up, we're on the website where we look up the developer, we can find everything, and people
protesting
kind of want to put their nose into the business a little bit. I'm not too sure if that's the case here.
It's the same. Like yesterday, 2 days ago, the day when we went to the event, they were saying, oh, that particular company I went to, they have a protest in one of the cases. It's a battery storage site. And now people are just targeting this storage system.
Yeah.
They are totally uncomfortable about having a giant battery at their backyard.
Mm.
They feel like it will explode. That definitely will explode and give some wavelength.
Is it a lithium ion battery or is it just a chemical battery? Because the type of battery makes a difference too.
Yeah, but I don't think they care. It's just
But they need... They don't care, but part of the way is to educate them based on this one.
Yes, I'll have to look into
it. It's sitting outdoors. It's designed to sit outside. It's okay if it gets a little hot. It's not
that
But over the process of this three and a half month project, it itself has changed and adapted to kind of how I've perceived some of these challenges in Taiwan. My idea of them have changed from before the project to while I've been doing it. I think if I were to have stuck exactly to the, the brief at the start as we both had imagined it, it probably would have been too rigid and maybe not as
interesting.
Yeah.
Or reflecting to the real situation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. Mm. I think throughout the process, I don't know if you've, how much you've, feel like you've learned from some of our discussions, but I've definitely felt my understanding of sustainable development and renewable energy developments have definitely changed.
Mm-hmm. Did you go through some of the case studies in other countries?
I've done a few.
Okay, so
yeah.
Because I'm reflecting to Taiwanese context, I spoke with the Gong Yan Yuan about whether is there any possibility to do something like that, and they were saying technically it's of course okay, but it's a thing that the government at the moment still find it's difficult to review the sensitive documents concerning that particular case before their decision. But the whole thing about engagement
should be transparent.
Yeah, and should be before their decision.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So now this aquavortex development, it's taking so long of this administration process. So we don't get to see any of them published on their website.
Mm.
They are willing to have it published only after that particular decision was made. And it's always a yes. So there will be a time when it's online, but it's after everything is done and there's no way to negotiate.
Yeah.
So it's a totally different misunderstanding of social engagement.
Yeah.
Yeah. So why in other countries this is not a big issue? Is that a cultural thing?
I don't think so. I think each country just has a different different way. I don't know whether it be said it's better or not. Like for Japan, for example, they have a search engine where you can search for them, but then they link out to developer websites. So the developer still hosts some of the information.
Right.
But you can find it on a government EIA website.
Okay.
For Victoria in Australia, there is a dedicated development website. We can find developments in Victoria and look at the EIA there that way.
And it's done by the local government?
Yeah, by the state government.
Mm.
But the difficult thing is, from what I've run into, is that, case studies sometimes have a window of time when they're available and then they get closed up after.
Oh,
so sometimes they do go up and you can see them when the window is open.
Uh-huh, like 2 weeks time.
Or however long. And then after the decision is made, those documents become
closed again. But it doesn't make sense. It's only, you can have your voice, you can send in your opinions within that window of time.
Yeah.
If you miss that time, then you don't get to speak. But you can still get to access this document.
Exactly. So, like, if you put it up,
why do you want
after the window has closed, but they haven't made a decision yet, but you can still view the comments and some of the participation.
Mm-hmm.
What are they scared that people are just going to email them saying, "Oh, we wanted to add this," or "We wanted to add that"? But like, the timing's up, over.
Mm-hmm.
They should still be able to see it.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense. If it was seen before, why can't it continue to be seen?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Something
you need to go back and find out why.
Yeah. Some other ideas would be, there's physical town halls, so where people can come and meet the developer can speak their case.
Mm.
Making sure that it's accessible to elderly.
Right.
Making sure it's accessible to people who may be out of town on that time and day by having an online, like a hybrid meeting as well. But I think the biggest change would have to be having a local version of an EIA or an environmental body, because having just a central government EIA, if you're someone living in a rural county town, you probably have a distrust in the federal government anyway.
Yeah.
And you also have probably have a distrust in the developer.
Yeah.
Who's probably based in one of the big cities and just coming into your town.
Mm.
So having a county level government, it might not be fully trustworthy.
Mm.
Like having a Jai County or a Yunlin County, but having a environmental EPA-like body that looks after EIAs at that level, they're more likely to find trust in them. They might be more active in that county and communicating. So, I don't know. Perhaps a big challenge is how do you build trust that the people's voices will be heard?
The thing is, I remember Buren told us that they are also responsible for some kind of EIA. It's not always in the central government, but we always were told about cases being viewed in the central government. So I don't know how they distribute this work. It's not existing now, but maybe in the future, it's doable under our law legislation to do it on the local government's level. The thing is, they have the same group of people outside the outside experts, and that's the same. I'm not sure whether they would make, you know, fix. How do they do this thing in the local area?
Yeah.
But and also whether that's a good thing. In our EPA, they would invite like 7 or so outside experts from, I think it's 12 or so people. Every year they got a particular contract about being in this particular position.
Mm-hmm.
So you get to come whenever you are available, I think. I'm not sure if it's invited every time or it's like certain, this particular set of people would come every time. Anyway, they are a particularly selected experts from the outside world. They always have a PhD title. And then there are governmental representative.
Yeah.
Like health and health. So, and they get to vote for a yes or no of that particular case.
Mm.
And that's different from other country, right?
Yeah.
For Taiwan, I think one of the thing is our people don't really have a clear idea of what's our right.
Mm.
What beside beyond my property, and how do we involve in this? This is a boundary that we are not familiar with. So they do, you know, you get to see people just demanding so much. It's not their business.
Yeah.
or making drama out of the thing. Like we said, they thought it's going to explore and not listening to any of this reasoning and things like that. Throwing table and chairs and I think it takes time and practice. So who is in charge or helping with the process is also important.
Yes.
If the developers are responsible for it, it normally would be running a high risk of facing this confrontation, right?
Yeah.
But who is suitable in what position to come in and help to guide people through? I mean, how do you really have a process? And it's not only one meeting. Maybe it's a series of things. It's involving interviewing, knocking at different people's door and really talk in a way that they are comfortable enough that they can express themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's very, I think, sometimes case by case. In order to make sure there's just and transparent engagement.
Each major side of who's involved in EIA, from the developer to the community that it's embedded in to the government that will ultimately be involved.
Mm.
They all have their own, I'm sure, their own preferences for what EIA covers and what it doesn't, and what the purpose of it is.
Yeah.
You know, for a developer, it's a distraction, an obstacle to get through, so they can ultimately build their site and to start making money.
Mm.
But it also gives them a little bit of an out to protect their risk, their reputation.
Mm.
Like, okay, we've engaged with the community. Mm. We know there's going to be no backlash. Mm. If there is backlash, it might be in the media, it might be in the news, it might harm our brand. And so they're probably more interested in protecting their reputation.
Yeah.
For the people, people are quite conservative when it comes to, you know, their land, the value of their land.
Yeah.
The fabric of their community.
Fabric.
So they're interested in, oh, if this is going to be here, I want to have a say.
Yeah. But then it might take like 2 or 3 or even more times until someone decided that this is the time I'm going to talk about something that's been there in my mind for a long time.
Mm. And this is a big opposition to EIA that I've seen, especially for renewable energy, is that now that if it gets applied to solar developments, you know, we're going to be building more solar than we built nuclear power plants or coal power plants.
Mm.
You know, how often do you build a coal power plant? Once every 10 years?
Yeah.
How often do you build a nuclear site?
Once
every 15, 20 years? So, by having more developments, you're going to be having more people involved in the process.
Yeah.
It just gives an opportunity for people to obstruct, have their voice said, heard, because now that there's a town hall, they can go to it.
Yeah.
They can have their potential to sue for damages or lobby the government. And so a lot of the literature that I've read is around, like, if you give people too much of a right and too much of a power and influence over a development, how much will they exercise that power?
Yeah, it's almost like voting. Like, we call ourselves as a democratic country and we vote for our president and whatever, mayors. But how much thought did you put into that? And every vote counts, like, equally.
But I think that opposition, it comes down to, A, culture. You know, if people are used to having this power, this right, and exercising it or not. And B is how much the government is willing to trust their people.
Mm.
You know, by extending people this democratic right to have a say over developments that may impact their society or environment.
Yeah.
By allowing them to be involved, saying, hey, we trust you.
Yeah.
Don't just use this as a tool to get revenge or because you're
because
bored.
Because it's a mutual relationship. And I think, C, how earnest or passionate these developers really are, as they claim themselves to be, like, fighting the climate change at the front with the community.
I think we can't just look at EIA in a vacuum to solve these problems. It's just like any problem. You can't say education in Taiwan. Like, you can't just fix the education policies. There's other, like, workplace policies that need looked at, or the working holiday. Oh, we've got a weekend. Oh, we've got a day off next Monday, so we have to work 2 weeks earlier on the weekend. Like, that thing needs to be fixed, but that will all help education in a way. And so with EIA, yes, if you expand the scope to solar, if you increase and improve citizen participation, but that's not going to fix everything. It's not going to make everyone happy. So involving things like community benefit sharing, having things like the government looking into a strategic environmental assessment and identifying particular sites that they've done some sort of scoping on before a developer goes in. A lot of these things working together will help. Not just changing one EIA,
component of this. They interact with each other.
With each other. They all have an influence. They all push and pull on each other.
Yeah. But if you view it in an interactive point of view, then you find yourself stuck in one of this position that other people or other stakeholders are reluctant or ignoring this, and you can't get all of them to be on the same team, and it's just making everything like they're pulling away from this thing. And that's, I think, the main thing that we are finding ourselves in.
Comes back to what we just spoke about earlier, was there is no common picture of what just transition looks like in Taiwan. And we've mentioned that the motives for going into renewable energy can be one of three reasons. It could be for environmental protection, climate change. It could be for national security and energy security. And it could just be to make money.
Yes. And it's the most practical aspect. People are willing to, you know, have an interest in it.
You know, NGOs will have their own preference for if they're working towards climate change, if they're working towards energy security. Developers will have their preference. Government has their own preference.
Yeah.
So it's pretty hard to get on the same page.
Well, but then that's also why it's so interesting and fascinating, in a way that our work is leading us to, we cannot really have just one specific thing and one specific mission to do. It requires us to, we'll just adjust our own, well, we'll have to really reflect how things are like this, because it's not single factor that's affecting the whole thing. And even if you think you understand the whole thing, why it's happening like this, there's no easy way to fix it, because there are so many stakeholders, and in reality, everyone is a stakeholder. So, So I think that's exactly why we are chatting about this, and hoping that we are heading to that correct direction. Every day.
Every day, just take a step.
Baby steps.
Baby steps.
As Makoto said.
And then when speaking to others, baby speak. So that concludes today's episode, talking about some of the work that I've been doing in the past 3.5 months, and how the project has evolved, the state of EIA in Taiwan.
Hope to talk again soon.
See you in the next episode.
Bye.
Bye.